wouldn't have to pamper them.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Faisal Khan, for joining us. I'm sorry we don't have more time. Faisal Khan writes for thelocal.se, Sweden's news in English. It is online. That does it for today's broadcast. And for our broadcasts from Stockholm, Sweden, we head to Hamburg, where we broadcast on Thursday and Friday. From Berlin on Friday night, I'll be speaking at Humboldt University at 6:30. You can go to our website, democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Anjali Kamat, Aaron Mate, Sharif Abdelkadous, Nicole Salazar, Steve Martinez, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen. I want to say special thanks to Dennis Moynihan and to my mom, Dari Goodman, who accompanied me on this trip. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is Matt with the Concert Billboard for Tuesday, December 9th. Tonight, the Ting Tings, the Airborne Toxic Event, the Duke Spirit, and Mike Dowdy from Soul Coughing are at Blender Theater at Gramercy. The Lee Boys with special guest Licorice are at Sullivan Hall. The Flower Traveling Band with Silver Summit and many more will be at the Knitting Factory. Babel Gilberto is at Joe's Pub. Ellis Ashbrook, the Armchairs, the Tiny Animals, and the Toy Soldiers are at Pianos. Beach House and Tickly Feather at the Music Hall of Williamsburg. The MI3 headlines Union Hall. Built by Animals, Midnight Spin, the Argyle Effect, and the Benjis are at the Trash Bar. Smokey Hormel is at the Rodeo Bar. The Tallest Man on Earth and Marissa Nadler have the late show at the Mercury Lounge. The Joe Traina Dectet, I think that's 10 musicians, they're at Iridium. The New York City Gay Men's Chorus is at Carnegie Hall, and Slam Allen is at Terra Blues. Tomorrow night, the big headliner is the WUSB Listener Party with the WUSB Jam Band. You can sign up for that at wusb.fm/pledge, and that's at Bobby Q and Pat Shaw. Sadat X, The Executioners, and Wayno are at the Knitting Factory. Wood Songs at the Movies with Phil Minasalli are at the Clearview Cinema at Babylon. The Awakening Orchestra is at the Brooklyn Lyceum. The 55 Bar headlines Cheryl Bailey. Venetian Stairs, Otto von Schirach, Cyrus Rex, and Naha are at Le Poisson Rouge, that's downtown. Culture Reject and Dead Stars at the Delancey. Bazooka Falcon with Sea of Eyes, Samson, and the Folkadelics, and Warm July, they're all at Southpaw. The Rodeo Bar features Joe Cassidy and the West End Sound. Will Johnson, Chris Brokaw, and James Armada are at Pianos. The Lauren Sevian Quartet, or LSQ, they're at Smoke. The Manchester Orchestra, Kevin Devine, and Dead Confederate are Maxwell's. The McGarrigle Christmas Hour, featuring Rufus and Martha Wainwright, are at Carnegie Hall. My Dear Disco is the early show at Mercury Lounge. The late show, it's Loney Deer, Melpo Mean, and Boy Genius. Concert Billboard can be heard all day, every day, here at 90.1 FM WUSB. If you missed anything, it's wusb.fm/CBB for a full online listing. This is Matt here at WUSB Stony Brook. Don't forget to have fun, everybody.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. Did I just step into a time warp or something? That's Matt on the Concert Billboard. What was it, 15 years ago he was doing that? Wow. I guess we just go back in time and run around in circles because there's no place else for us to go. Well, anyway, it's 3 minutes after 6 o'clock. And as I said, you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's time for Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour this week. Yes, it's the first week in, a month that we've had a full hour? Amazing. Let the celebration begin. We have a lot to talk about, a lot to catch up on, and hopefully we'll be able to take phone calls to 631-632-9872 on this. Now it's a warm December day. Yesterday it was a cold December day. It's one of those months where you don't know where you're going. We had snow. We had snow a couple of days ago. That was kind of cool. Just a dusting, but still, it's nice. Better than we've had some winters. And it's that crazy time of year where everybody's going mad, going to stores and shopping and getting into traffic jams and things like that. And unfortunately, I got dragged into it yesterday because, finally, I was able to get somebody to do house cleaning. Now, house cleaning is something you have to do when you have dust allergies and you can't clean yourself because you get sick. So you have to get somebody to do it for you. And sometimes it can take months to find somebody who will actually show up and do the job. Just like getting your grass cut or getting your leaves raked. You know, people complain all the time about, oh my God, these illegal immigrants are coming and taking all of our jobs. Well, you know what? The people who are here right now are not doing the jobs. And you literally have to jump through hoops. I was told to jump through a hoop. I'm not kidding. And I had to do that in order to get people to come and actually do something. And finally, after months of trying, I got someone to show up, which meant that I had to go someplace and do something while they were doing this. And I figured I might as well just do a little bit of shopping, you know, not for anybody else, just for myself, just some things that I'd run out of. And, I went into the mall. Oh God, I hate going into the mall in December. It's the worst possible thing. And what always happens, you always wind up in this line of people that simply do not know how to function. This is one of the reasons why I don't like being up in the daytime. This is why I do everything at night, because there's nobody around. You can drive fast. You can do all your banking and shopping needs and whatever else, and there's nobody in your way. But, oh my God, yesterday everybody was in the way. I was in a department store. I won't name names. But every single cash register had at least 8 people waiting in line. And not just a line, a slow line. A really slow line. Finally, I just went to get, you know, a few socks, okay? A few socks and some other items. Very simple. I'm in and out of there in 30 seconds. I know what I want. I know my size. I go, I pick it out. None of this drama. None of this, oh my God, will this color match this particular couch if I'm sitting on it? I've seen people shop. I've shopped with friends. And they take forever. And I just want to get on with life. You know, it doesn't last forever. So you might as well do other things. But it doesn't matter. Your whole system of speeding and doing things efficiently is thwarted when you have to wait online behind a couple of senior citizens who are bickering over coupons. And I'm not kidding. This just went on for about 25 minutes, where basically they had some kind of special promotional card, which wasn't working because they weren't spending enough. You see, they were over the limit if you added in the tax. I think it had to be $100 or something like that. So their total was $103. But as the cashier was trying to explain to them, I think 3 or 4 different times, you see your subtotal is actually $94. If you could just buy something else for another $6, then you'll be able to get the savings. Or you could sign up for a special credit card now and get 15% savings off the bat. And this just went on forever. It was like they were buying a house. They just went back and forth, the husband between the husband and the cashier, the wife and the cashier, all three of them together. Never paying a bit of attention to the poor person behind them, who really did not want to be there more than anything in the world. Finally, they decide, okay, we're going to go and we're going to find something in the store for $6. And God knows they're probably still there bickering over that. And they were bickering over that as I finally got out. It took me about 30 seconds to do my transaction. Oh, they tried to hold me. They tried to hold me there, saying, now you want to sign up for a credit card? No. Just get me out of here, please. I don't want this to last the rest of my life. But some people do. I think maybe it's the social setting or something. Maybe people just want to interact with other people no matter the cost. Figuratively or literally. But no, not me. If I go into a grocery store, I did this yesterday. I'm not one of these people that goes into a grocery store and shops for 45 minutes or 2 hours or whatever people do. I go in when I need something and I get that thing and then I leave. Yesterday I needed bananas and toothpaste. I walked in, picked up bananas, walked over to the toothpaste, got that, went to the automated cashier. Yeah, not even a human. and checked out. And I've gotten really good at it, too. I can be in and out of a supermarket in less than 2 minutes, and that's walking the expanse of it. Because I know where things are, I know how the system works, and I know how not to get hung up on it. And I've even tried to make little challenges for myself. Try checking out with the automated cashier using a language that you do not speak. Yeah, that's cool. And it freaks people out around you, too, because all of a sudden this thing is speaking Turkish or something, and they don't know what's going on. And you know all the buttons, you know what to press, you know what to hit, you know where to go. And you're out of there just as quickly. And you've learned a little bit of a foreign language as well. Yeah, who says shopping can't be fun? It's just, it gets aggravating when you have to deal with morons who do not know how to move faster than a slug. And there should be other, I guess, other stores maybe. Other places to go for people who do know how to move fast. It's not like I'm in a race. It's just, I'm not in a competition to go as slow as I possibly can either. I just kind of like to have a change of scenery, have things progress. A sense that maybe you're going to a different place than you were, say, an hour ago. It's always nice. I also, you know, I know this isn't striking a sympathetic bell with many people because, quite honestly, I'm sort of going against the grain here, but I guess I realize that I'm not that nice a person when it comes to interacting with my fellow strangers or whatever. Because I was actually, I did a lot of shopping yesterday, in fact. I went to the bookstore to buy calendars. Yeah, we got to do that once a year, too. And this poor woman who was standing also looking at calendars was just looking at one, and for some reason that one was attached to all the others, and they all just fell down onto the ground. And it made this ridiculous noise. It made this noise that was just way too absurd. And I just sort of, you know, I exchanged a knowing glance, like, oh boy, that's glad that wasn't me. And I figured that was the end of it, you know, but, you know, she was perfectly capable of picking them all up herself. But all these other people came running over to help pick them up, and she was so grateful and so happy. And I realized, boy, what a jerk I must seem like, because all I did was exchange a knowing glance. But I wouldn't expect someone to come running over to help me if I dropped something, even if it wasn't my fault. I'd probably just leave it there in the first place. But it was awkward, because then I had to stand there for the next 20 minutes looking at calendars next to this person who I hadn't helped. But, you know, she didn't look like she needed help. I figured it might be an insult if I went over there and helped her pick things up, because I'd be saying that, you know, you seem like you're rather frail and you need a man's help. And, you know, I didn't want to get into all that. I just wanted to buy my damn calendar, which I did. And I got out of the store before she did. So yeah, that's shopping. That's a little taste of it here in December. One of the reasons I don't like this month, one of the reasons I don't like malls, one of the reasons I try to get away every year about this time. And yes, I'll be at CCC, the Chaos Communication Congress in Berlin. Please write in if you're going to be there as well. Any of our European listeners, please let us know if you'll be around. Looking for, you know, Americans just simply are worse than ever. They don't seem to want to go anywhere or do anything fun. It's pathetic. Might be all by myself riding a train from Amsterdam to Berlin. But what are you going to do? It's a lot of fun. If you're interested in the hacker world from a German perspective, Germans who speak English, go to ccc.de. All the information is there. And it's a lot of fun. It's a beautiful part of the world. Nice time of year. I know people complain. They say, oh, Berlin, it's going to be cold. It's the winter time. You know what? You're in New York already. It's going to be just the same. Except it'll be a very different environment. It's something you might learn something from. Okay, speaking of foreign lands, we have some foreign land news. The rioting is continuing in Greece. Yes, no end in sight. This is incredible. This is really something. This, more than anything else, paints the differences in culture between our way of life here and their way of life over there. This all started on Saturday when this 15-year-old kid was killed by the cops. Now, there were already demonstrations going on throughout Athens with what they call self-styled anarchists. I'm not quite sure what that means. I mean, is there a license you're supposed to get if you're not a self-styled anarchist, or I'm not really sure, but they say, the cops, that is, say that he was part of a crowd of kids who were throwing stones and petrol bombs. Now, I don't know if you've been watching the video of this, but yeah, they throw petrol bombs. I'm embarrassed. I don't even know how to make a petrol bomb, let alone throw it at a bunch of cops. It, you know, it doesn't seem very nice, but they do that kind of thing over there. And they burn down buildings and they burn cars and dumpsters and things like that. And they really let out their emotions. And for some reason, life goes on afterwards. It's something I really don't understand. So it was all the more shocking when the cops actually killed this kid, who they say was about to throw a petrol bomb at them or something like that. Now, if something like that were to happen in this country, everybody would be all over this kid for daring to try and attack a cop, a much better armed cop, too, for that matter. And everybody would be defending the cop's actions, saying that he was acting in self-defense and these anarchists have to be stopped and things like that. And you know it's true. Try throwing a petrol bomb at a cop if you don't believe me. No, don't do that, please. Please don't do that. So in Athens, that kind of thing has been going on for days now because people have been so outraged by this, what they consider unprovoked killing. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. The policeman who did this has been charged with manslaughter the next day, maybe even the same day. Manslaughter with intent. Yeah, a second police officer was arrested on Saturday on criminal accessory charges. Now, the rioting's continuing, but look at the way that the government deals with this. Not simply lining up behind the cops saying, well, innocent till proven guilty, and we'll see, we'll let a grand jury decide, maybe 6 months or a year from now something will happen, and then they'll get acquitted, and et cetera, et cetera. No, they're aggressive. They have a completely different outlook on human life, apparently. And the way cops interact with fellow citizens. And it is more like they're fellow citizens rather than an occupying force that you would never dare touch. It's pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. And you have to look at the statistics here. Now, people are getting injured, but so far the 15-year-old kid is the only one who got killed. And he got killed by the cops. It's kind of, I have a feeling if that was happening in another place, there'd be a lot more dead. And a lot more firing of guns and things like that. It seems in the Greek culture, the current Greek culture, that's this kind of thing is just unacceptable. You don't shoot somebody, even if you're a cop, even if you feel like your life might be in danger. Anyway, the Greek interior minister says, under no circumstances will the government accept what is occurring. We will do what is necessary, of course, referring to the demonstrators. It's unclear what will be necessary to placate the demonstrators. There are just so many of them going on. 34 civilians, 16 police officers were injured yesterday in rioting that has now spread into new municipalities. And they've been all over the place. At least five, six different municipalities. Demonstrators torched three government buildings, three offices of the ruling conservative political party in downtown Athens. 35 cars, 160 trash containers have been set ablaze. Demonstrators on Monday barricaded streets in Athens and Thessaloniki and hurled gasoline bombs as they battled with police. Clouds of tear gas hung over the capital city as riot police continued to battle the hundreds of, as I said, young self-styled anarchists rioting over the boy's death. The thing is, they were demonstrating before, too. It's interesting. I mean, what's the demonstration about to start with? Not really going into that so much. Anyway, government officials condemned the shooting. An investigation is underway. Those found responsible will be punished. Measures will also be taken to avoid such incidents in the future. That's according to the Greek Interior Minister, Prokopis Pavlopoulos. Now, on Monday, authorities conducted an autopsy on the teenage boy in an effort to answer questions about the circumstances of the shooting, but the boy's family has called in their own investigators to verify state findings. Now, of course, tourists are being warned that they probably shouldn't be around there and might want to go someplace else. This is also interesting. Authorities have been barred from entering university grounds. Now, a lot of these kids are winding up in the behind the gates of a state university. They're barricaded behind the gates of this state university, and authorities are not allowed to go in there ever since 1973, when tanks crushed a student uprising protesting the ruling military junta. It's not clear what authorities would do about the demonstrators still holed up at the university. So, totally different culture there. Run into the gates of a university. I guarantee you, try that here at Stony Brook. Cops will follow. They'll follow. Oh, yes. But not in Greece. Very, very interesting. Okay, so what happens here? Well, here we have slightly different culture. You might have heard this story a few months ago about this this guy who was attacked by three NYPD cops, accused of holding him down in a subway station and sodomizing him with a police baton. Sort of tradition in NYPD, it seems. Well, they finally indicted these guys. Richard Kern was indicted when police found that the DNA on his baton matched the DNA of the victim. Yeah. Officers Andrew Morales and Alex Cruz are accused of covering up the attack. They were indicted today on charges of hindering prosecution and official misconduct, and each faces up to 4 years in prison. The victim says, "I'm pleased. It still hasn't changed what happened. I relive this every day. I'm still in pain. I'm too young to go through this. No one should have to go through this." I remember when this happened a while ago. Everybody was just focusing on this guy and what he was doing and how he was challenging the cops and what kind of lifestyle he led, and basically stacking the deck in favor of the cops, because you always believe cops in this country. Oh, you have to do that. Yeah, he was smoking marijuana, apparently. So right away, that's reason. Okay, he's scum. He deserves whatever he gets, and you have to believe the cops. Now, what's interesting here in this particular case is that fellow officers actually testified in front of a grand jury, basically saying things that helped to indict them. And the Brooklyn prosecutor, in fact, said, "I think both of the officers, who are named in the story, by the way, acted in a responsible, if not heroic, way. I think both of them deserve a great deal of praise for that. It's a very, very difficult thing for a police officer to be put in that position. It's very, very rare that you have this type of cooperation. And I'll tell you what, based on my understanding of the police culture and my watching of many police TV shows, that these guys are in for a world of hell now, because they'll be called rats and they'll be treated like they're the criminals because they dared to say something that led to a fellow officer getting nailed for what he did. You don't do that in the police force. You don't. You stand up for your fellow cop no matter what. And it's that kind of blind allegiance that leads to all the problems, leads to all the resentment from the populace. And of course, the president of the police union released a statement saying, "An indictment is nothing more than an accusation, and police enjoy the same presumption of innocence as everyone else. NYPD officers endure a tough and dangerous job every day, and we have earned the benefit of a doubt with our blood and sacrifice. No one should come to any conclusions before all the evidence is heard." Well, I'd like to know if he'd say that about somebody that he arrested, or somebody that a fellow cop arrested. So, yeah, it's justice moves a bit slower around here. Sometimes you get it. Five former security guards from Blackwater Worldwide have turned themselves into federal authorities. This happened yesterday. They did this in Salt Lake City, Utah, over charges stemming from, you might remember this, shootings in Baghdad in 2007. We talked about this here. Killed 17 Iraqis. Yeah, 2007. September 2007, and only now, in December of 2008, have they actually been indicted. The Justice Department plans to charge the former guards with manslaughter and a weapons charge of using a machine gun while committing a crime of violence. A sixth Blackwater guard tied to the incident has reached a plea deal with the government. The sources said defense attorneys decided to have them all surrender in one location rather than in their home states or in Washington, D.C., The guard's surrender in Utah is a matter of convenience and is likely to be followed by an aggressive legal defense. One of the sources said defense attorneys plan to fight over venue first, then argue, get this, that U.S. law does not pertain to the actions of these guards. Yeah, they're immune from the law. And you know what? When they were in Iraq, they were immune from Iraqi law because they were U.S. citizens. So these guys, they can do anything they want. They're like superheroes. They can just fly around and kill anybody, and no country can touch them. That's according to Blackwater, anyway, the way they seem to view the law. Now, what's interesting, the State Department employed Blackwater to protect U.S. diplomats and other employees, and they've had no comment on this big mess. Oh, the men, incidentally. You want to know who they are? I'll tell you who they are. Donald Ball, 26 years old, West Valley City, Utah. Dustin Hurd, 27, Knoxville, Tennessee. Evan Liberty. Oh, that's a great name. Evan Liberty. 26 of Rochester, New Hampshire. Nick Slatin, 25 of Sparta, Tennessee. And Paul Slough, 29 of Keller, Texas. The government has told Blackwater that the company will not face charges. I remember the company standing up for these guys blindly and saying they did nothing wrong. And despite all the evidence showing that there was no indication they were being fired on, they just shot indiscriminately into a crowd of people. Now, Iraqi authorities accused Blackwater guards of killing 17 civilians, wounding nearly 30 in the September 2007 shootings in Nisour Square, that's in western Baghdad. Blackwater said its guards were protecting a U.S. diplomatic convoy when they came under attack from armed insurgents. The guards returned fire. But an Iraqi investigation called the killings premeditated murder and accused the guards of firing on civilians indiscriminately. The first U.S. soldiers to arrive on the scene told military investigators they found no evidence the contractors were fired upon. The FBI also investigated and determined that the shootings were unprovoked, and Blackwater personnel used excessive force. Now, among the problems here is that the law under which the charges are expected to be brought covers contractors working for the U.S. military, but the Blackwater guards were contracted by the State Department. And some independent legal experts question whether U.S. courts have jurisdiction in this case. Also muddying the waters are alleged assurances of immunity given to the guards by State Department diplomatic security agents investigating the incident before the FBI got involved. The State Department said its agents did not offer blanket immunity from criminal prosecution, but only promised that statements the guards made on the scene could not be used against them in any prosecution. It's quite a promise there. Could have come in handy for me quite a few times if my statements made at the scene weren't used against me. Wow. Security contractors had immunity from Iraqi law under a provision put in place in the early days of the U.S.-led occupation of Iraq. But starting next year, under a U.S.-Iraqi security agreement that Iraq approved last week, Iraq will have the primary right to exercise jurisdiction over U.S. contractors and their employees. Boy, common sense, eh? And just the icing on top of the cake here, the State Department, which employed Blackwater to protect U.S. diplomats and other employees, has renewed Blackwater's contract over strong objections from the Iraqi government. And so it continues. What else? What other fun things have been happening? Oh, you think you're safe in your house. You think that, do you? You think you can just relax, watch television, be immune from all the garbage going on in the world? No, doesn't work that way. In San Diego, four people were killed when a military jet plowed into their home in San Diego. Yes, grandmother, a mother, and two children were killed when a military fighter jet crashed into a house yesterday, igniting a huge fireball. And I imagine most of us have heard about this story, but it's the reaction that gets me. I've read so many stories about this. We see people saying things like, "Gosh, maybe a couple of hundred feet off the ground, and it was quiet. I think the engine was off. Then all of a sudden, we saw the canopy of the jet explode and go up, and then we saw the pilot blast out of the plane and the parachute open." Another witness said the jet was flying at a low altitude and just spiraled right out of the movie Top Gun. Yeah. The pilot ejected, landed safely. In fact, there's pictures of him making cell phone calls on the front lawn of the house that's burning. And more witnesses. The house shook like an earthquake. I saw the flames right there in front of my house. unbelievable. Now, it's hard to say whose fault this is. It could be a mechanical problem. It could be all sorts of things. But nobody is saying, you know what? What in God's name is the military doing flying their stupid jets over people's homes? You know, this is not right. And I'll bet you if it was a Greek airplane and it crashed into a Greek house, there'd be riots. Yeah, lots of riots. And the government might do something about it. But here, nah, you know, you want to do your airplane tricks or whatever over a school or a development or a mall or something like that? Well, I guess that's the price we pay for living in the best country in the world. You know, practice over the ocean, practice over the desert, practice over your own military base. Don't practice over people's homes. That's just wrong. No one's saying that. Why am I the only person saying this? I just think we have the right not to have a military jet plow into our homes and kill us. It's controversial, I know, but I just think that's something that we should have. Oh, and then today, oh boy, this is something. The governor of Illinois was arrested today. Yeah, Governor Rod Blagojevich. I'm sorry if I say that wrong. Blagojevich? I haven't ever said it before. There's no reason for me to say it. He was arrested and appeared in court this afternoon to hear federal corruption charges against him. He was then released on $4,500 bail. How did they come up with these figures? $4,500, yeah. Very strange. FBI agents arrested him and his chief of staff, John Harris, early today on federal corruption charges related in part to the selection of President-elect Barack Obama's successor to the Senate. Now, before everybody freaks out, Barack Obama was not connected. I know, this is something. The Barack haters, call them Obama haters. What are they called officially? Obama haters. Okay. The Obama haters are out there looking for anything they can get to make people afraid of him and to really get some kind of a reaction before he even does anything. So no doubt this hasn't happened yet, but I'm sure you'll be seeing people jump on this. Oh, wow. Look, he was trying to sell Barack Obama's seat in the Senate. This corrupt governor, who's also a Democrat. Obama must have known. He's part of it. He's guilty. He can't be president. Et cetera, et cetera. Now, according to U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald, today is a sad day for government. Governor Blagojevich has taken us to a new low. This conduct would make Abraham Lincoln roll over in his grave. Now, Fitzgerald said the government had bugged the governor's campaign office and placed a tap on his home phone. Supposedly, word about this was already out, yet he continued to use the phone and say all kinds of incriminating things. I don't get it. It's like either this guy is playing a game or he thinks he's completely untouchable. I'm sure we'll be hearing more about the various things he's accused of and what sort of other things he's been doing over the years. But supposedly, there are all kinds of other things. He was accused of threatening to pull $8 million in funding for a children's hospital. Unless a $50,000 contribution was given to the governor's campaign. You couldn't write a story that makes him look more evil than that, could you? He threatened to burn down an orphanage. Unless, no, okay, he didn't do that, but it's almost the same. And today I also heard that he was talking to the owners of the Chicago Cubs, who I believe also own Wrigley Field, and they wanted to sell Wrigley Field, but they needed the state's permission or something from the state to do this. But the only way they were going to get that would be if they fired the writers of an editorial. They also own the Chicago Tribune, apparently. They own everything. But they had to fire those writers who criticized him, criticized the governor. This guy is just, according to what they're saying here, and innocent until proven guilty and all that, but wow, this is TV show corrupt is what it is. Somebody who is so evil and thinks they can control everything that they just pull off the most unbelievable stunts. So yeah, that's a story to watch. And what's incredible is the amount of times we see things like this. I mean, of course, there was our own governor, Governor Spitzer, of course, with this sex scandal earlier in the year, forced to resign and in disgrace, not charged with any crime, although he could have been. And the state's last governor, Illinois' last governor, George Ryan, was convicted in April 2006 on racketeering and fraud charges. And he's in prison right now. So it's politics in the U.S. Wow. I hope Obama can stay out of that. Would be nice. Okay, but getting back to the Obama haters, they suffered a setback this week. Have you heard about this? This is incredible. The Supreme Court rejected an emergency appeal from a retired lawyer in New Jersey who really has too much time on his hands and was questioning Barack Obama's eligibility to be president because he had dual British-American citizenship at birth. Yeah, this comes out now. I know people have been talking about it for a while, but it's incredible how it just will not die because it's because of the internet mostly. It's because people can latch onto an issue and just keep talking it to death until other people believe, hey, this is a valid issue. When all you have to do is look at the facts. But continuing with this story, the justices without comment yesterday refused to intervene in the November 4th presidential election, dismissing the claims of Leo DiNocno, a resident of East Brunswick, New Jersey. In his appeal, he claims that because Obama's father was a Kenyan-born British subject, the president-elect does not meet the Constitution's requirement that the president be a natural-born citizen of the United States. Obama was born in Hawaii in 1961. His mother was a U.S. citizen born in the United States. Many legal analysts question the argument here. The law has always been understood to be, if you are born here, you're a natural-born citizen. And it's particularly true in this case when you have a U.S. citizen parent like Barack Obama's mother. Now, I did a little bit of digging into this, and I found there's petitions, there's all kinds of websites devoted to this where people are really getting very caught up in it, very angry, as if we're under attack or something by some kind of foreign nation. It really is getting to that point. These people are being fired up. And someone needs to calm them down. Someone needs to show them, hey, this is the way things really are. Now, of course, I went over to Snopes, which is the site you go to look at urban legends and things like that. The claim Barack Obama does not qualify as a natural-born citizen of the United States, this time because his mother was too young. Yeah. Now, get this. It seems that Barack Obama is not qualified to be president, after all, for the following reasons. This is an email that was being sent out back in June. Barack Obama is not legally a U.S. natural-born citizen, according to the law on the books at the time of his birth, which falls between December 24, 1952, to November 13, 1986. Presidential office requires a natural-born citizen if the child was not born to two U.S. citizen parents, which, of course, is what exempts John McCain, though he was born in the Panama Canal. U.S. law very clearly stipulates if only one parent was a U.S. citizen at the time of your birth, that parent must have resided in the United States for at least 10 years, at least five of which had to be after the age of 16. Barack Obama's father was not a U.S. citizen, and Obama's mother was only 18 when Obama was born, which means, though she had been a U.S. citizen for 10 years, or a citizen perhaps because of Hawaii being a territory, the mother fails the test for being so for at least 5 years prior to Barack Obama's birth, but after age 16. It doesn't matter after. This is very badly written. I'm sorry. I'm just reading it as it was sent out. In essence, she was not old enough to qualify her son for automatic U.S. citizenship. At most, there were only 2 years elapsed since his mother turned 16 at the time of Barack Obama's birth when he was 18 in Hawaii. His mother would have needed to have been 16 plus 5 equals 21 years old at the time of Barack Obama's birth for him to have been a natural-born citizen. As aforementioned, she was a young college student at the time and was not. Barack Obama was already 3 years old at that time. His mother would have needed to have waited to have him as the only U.S. citizen parent. I'm sorry, I was just trouble following this. Obama instead should have been naturalized, but even then, that would still disqualify him from holding the office. Naturalized citizens are ineligible to hold the office of president. Okay, anyway, to get to the facts in this particular case, the minimum qualifications for the presidency of the United States specified in Article 2 of the Constitution are few and seemingly straightforward. In order to be president, a person must be a natural-born citizen of the United States, must be at least 35 years old, and must have been a resident of the United States for 14 years. These qualifications aren't quite so straightforward as they might seem, however. For example, what does the phrase 14 years a resident within the United States mean? Can those 14 years be cumulative, or do they have to be consecutive? Do the 14 years of U.S. residency have to immediately precede the presidential election, or can they have occurred at any period in a candidate's life? These were issues that confronted Herbert Hoover, who, because of his work first for a British mining firm and later for the U.S. government during World War I, had spent a good deal of time abroad and returned to the U.S. less than 14 years prior to his election in 1928. Likewise, the natural-born citizen requirement is not so straightforward either, because the Constitution didn't define what a natural-born citizen was. The definition of natural-born citizen was left up to individual states to decide until the adoption of the 14th Amendment in 1868, but even that amendment has been subject to further interpretation. What qualifies a person for natural-born citizenship status under U.S. law can be quite complicated, depending on factors such as where the person was born, when he was born, where he and his parents lived, and the nationalities of his parents. Some of these factors might seemingly come into play in the case of Democratic presidential nominee Barack Obama, although his mother was herself a natural-born U.S. citizen, his father was a Kenyan national, and his parents may or may not have been legally married in the eyes of U.S. law. Moreover, his parents split up when he was but a toddler, and his mother soon afterwards married another foreign national and moved with Barack to Indonesia. The item quoted basically theorizes that Barack Obama does not qualify as a natural-born citizen of the U.S. because the law in question, law in effect at the time he was born, specified that if only one parent was a U.S. citizen at the time of your birth, that parent must have resided in the United States for at least 10 years, at least 5 of which had to be above the age of 16. Now, since Barack Obama only had one U.S. citizen parent, his mother, and his mother had not been residing in the U.S. for at least 5 years after the age of 16 when Barack was born, because she herself was only 18 at the time, then he's not a natural-born citizen. Now, a few facets of this claim immediately jump out as being far-fetched. First, that a sitting U.S. senator who has already spent a good deal of time and money securing his party's nomination for the presidency would suddenly be discovered as ineligible due to an obscure provision of U.S. law. And second, that U.S. law would essentially penalize someone who would otherwise qualify for natural-born citizenship status simply because his mother was too young. The fact is, the qualifications listed in the example quoted are moot because they refer to someone who was born outside the United States. Since Barack Obama was born in Hawaii, they do not apply to him. But, you know, that doesn't shut them up. They continue. Now, the latest thing, you'll see this everywhere. Why doesn't he just produce his birth certificate? Well, you know what he did? There's a scan of it available all throughout the net. But that's not good enough either, because these people, they want the original. They all want to touch it or something. I don't know. And as soon as they do, as soon as that's provided to them, they're going to say it's a forgery. They just will not stop. And at some point, you have to draw the line and say, you know, I'm not going to listen to these lunatics, because by acknowledging them, you're legitimizing what they're saying. And the whole thing is completely absurd and stupid. And it's just another reason why people are trying to empower themselves through their fear. Simply incredible. I've never seen this kind of reaction. I get chain letters and I see all kinds of mail going around saying, we have to stop this. You know what's going to happen? Our country, we won't be speaking English anymore. They're taking over. Whatever. I've been watching what Obama has been doing over the past couple of weeks, and I have to say, and I'm probably going against all my lefty friends and certainly all my right-wing friends in saying that I think he's doing some pretty impressive things in the people he's appointing. Now, take Hillary Clinton, for instance, the new Secretary of State, if she's confirmed, that is. That's a genius move. It really is, because what it does, it placates all those people that were resentful of Obama for taking the nomination away from her, as if it was her God-given right. It gets her to be working for him. And yes, you know, she is somebody who voted for the war, somebody who disagrees with a lot of what the left wing stands for. But she will be working for Barack Obama. She will not be imposing policy herself. It's a big difference. Now, what Obama said during his campaign was he intends to reach across the aisle. He's not even reaching across the aisle in this particular case. He's just reaching back a couple of rows. But by doing so, by basically bridging some gaps, by turning so-called enemies into allies, you get a lot of people behind you, a lot of people agreeing with you, a lot of people respecting your authority. It's genius. It makes a lot of sense. You don't simply reach out and get somebody who has never done anything before just to placate a bunch of people that you want to impress. You get somebody with experience. And you can argue whether or not Hillary Clinton has enough experience or the right kind of experience. But it certainly seems like this is something that most people agree with. Now, if this particular way of dealing with people is also extended to dealing with nations, imagine this. Imagine that, let's equate Hillary Clinton to North Korea. Has that anyone ever done that before? Okay, well, I'm going to do it right now. Hillary Clinton is North Korea, okay? She's something alien, something different, somebody who disagrees, has different values, and was before seen as an enemy. But by doing this, by reaching out to this person and respecting them and letting them have something, all of a sudden, a lot of bridges have been built. All of a sudden, there might actually be some unity. Now, imagine if foreign policy followed that particular philosophy, where somehow the leaders of North Korea, the leaders of Iran, the leaders of Cuba were talked to like adults and listened to and respected to a degree. Maybe there would be a step after that where all the animosity would go down a few levels and then we could actually make some progress and effect change. It certainly doesn't work to treat people or treat countries like enemies and not talk to them and not deal with them. So I see this as a positive thing. And I think, you know, we have to be patient. We have to see how this particular administration plays out. The only question, the only thing that matters is, will Barack Obama continue to be a visionary or will he sell out to certain interests? Now, just by appointing people who have connections to those interests does not mean he is, in fact, selling out. It means he's listening. He's listening to what these people have to say. In the end, he is the one who makes the decisions. And we'll just have to see how those decisions go. Now, something that I was really impressed with was his idea in these tough economic times to actually start pouring money into the infrastructure of this country. Wow, this is exactly what we need. Everything's falling apart. By creating millions of jobs, and yeah, it involves spending a lot of money, but you know what? Where are all these people criticizing the spending of money when wars were started, which cost so much more money and plunged us into debt more than anything? The worst thing to do now would be what everybody else would do and simply tighten belts and do without. No. It's exactly true that we need to strengthen. We need to build bridges, rebuild bridges, pave the roads, and build some mass transit throughout the country. And this is the kind of thing I'm seeing. Now, of course, in the end, it depends on what the local governments, what the state governments and city governments say they need. So hopefully they'll do what helps the people more than anything. But to get into mass transit, high-speed rail, for instance, that is something that I see great potential in with this particular way of dealing with the economy. Listen to what Barack Obama said in the past. The irony is with gas prices what they are, this is when they were soaring, we should be expanding rail service. One of the things I've been talking about for a while is high-speed rail connecting all of these Midwest cities, Indianapolis, Chicago, Milwaukee, Detroit, St. Louis. They are not that far away from each other. Because of how big a hassle airlines are now, there are a lot of people that if they had the choice, it takes just about as much time if you had high-speed rail to go to the airport, park, take your shoes off, etc. He also said, this is something that we should be talking about a lot more. We are going to be having a lot of conversations this summer about gas prices. Obviously, this was a quote from earlier. It's a perfect time to start talk about why we don't have better rail service. We are the only advanced country in the world that doesn't have high-speed rail. We just don't have it. and it works on the Northeast Corridor. They would rather go from New York to Washington by train than they would by plane. It's a lot more reliable. It's a good way for us to start reducing how much gas we are using. It is a good story to tell. Right on. Absolutely. Listen to what he said about on the subject, more about the Midwest. If you think about the Midwest, think about right here, what we've got, all kinds of towns that we could connect. All these cities basically take in the air about 45 minutes to an hour to fly. But by the time you get to the airport, take off your shoes, get to the terminal, realize that your flight's been delayed 2 hours, go pay $10 for a cup of coffee and a sandwich for another $10, come back, you get on the plane, you're sitting on the tarmac for another 25 minutes, you finally take off, you're circling above the sky for another half hour, when you land, you can't find your luggage, and then you get to where you're going. By the time it's all done, it's a five-hour trip. So the time is right now for us to start thinking about high-speed rail as an alternative to air transportation, connecting all these cities. And think about what a great project that would be in terms of rebuilding America. I just hope that this philosophy stays intact and that we're seeing the beginnings of it in throwing money at these projects, and that states and cities say, this is what we need. We need to build the infrastructure in the form of high-speed rail and mass transit within cities. We might actually find ourselves in a much better place fairly soon. All right, so that's what's going on there. What else? Guardian Angels, they're starting to patrol Patchogue, site of the hate crime a few weeks ago, the murder of the Ecuadorian, I don't know how to, just person from Ecuador who was killed because he was Hispanic. Because of all the anti-immigrant feelings around here. Declaring we are here to help, a dozen guardian angels arrived in Patchogue yesterday morning with promises to prevent biased crimes. Of course, leaders of the village reacted coolly to founder Curtis Sliwa's assertion that the volunteers will stop the hunting of Hispanics. Sliwa said the volunteer patrols will rove sidewalks at night to quell conflicts, make citizens' arrests, and serve as a visual deterrence to criminals. He decried last month's killing of Ecuadorian immigrant Marcelo Lechero, saying that all residents, including those who are not documented, need protection. Thank you. And if you're down there in Patchogue, please welcome these guys. They're here to help. And don't help the guys that are there to cause harm and spread hatred. They help nobody. And there was also another bias attack in Brooklyn, another Ecuadorian immigrant. And in fact, he died today after being viciously beaten with a bottle and a bat by attackers who shouted anti-gay and anti-Hispanic slurs. Jose Sukishani had been in very critical condition following brain surgery. Community leaders and city politicians called for the swift arrest of the men responsible for attacking him and his brothers in the weekend hate crime in Bushwick. Unbelievable. This kind of thing just continues. According to police, Sukasani and his brother were walking arm-in-arm when a carload of four men pulled up shouting anti-gay and anti-Latino epithets. He was first struck with a bottle, then beaten with a bat, suffering open head trauma. No arrests yet. And I should point out, the people who did this were not white. They were black. Hate crime goes everywhere. And we have to battle it on all levels. All right, I'd like to end on a high note, but I'm not going to, because today is December 9th, and December 9th for me is one of the saddest days of the year, because it was 28 years ago that I remember the day after John Lennon was shot, the reaction of the world, the reaction of my friends, the reaction of the people here at the radio station. It was like we were shot. It was like we were numbed. I'm going to read a story here before we go out. This is from a website that just happened to find about that particular day. Double Fantasy had already been released and was doing pretty well on the charts. I don't think it had reached number one in the charts until after John's death, though. He was going about his usual business, giving interviews and was having pictures taken. To him, it was just a normal Monday. He was going into the studio later that day with Yoko to work on her upcoming release, Walking on Thin Ice. It would be the last time he would ever enter the studio. A man who lived in Hawaii had traveled to New York City with a mission. In his mind, He was not going to give up until his mission was accomplished. He would kill John Lennon. What made this even more eerie was that he had traveled there before to kill him and did not. When Mark David Chapman flew to New York City the second time, he accomplished his dream. As John Lennon was leaving the Dakota Building early on the day of December 8th, he was approached by what he thought was a fan. As usual, John obliged with an autograph. Mark had asked him, "John, will you sign this?" And John said, "Sure, no problem," and he signed it with Mark's pen. After he had signed it, he asked Mark, "Is that all you want?" And then he asked it again, "Is that all you want?" And Mark replied with a yes. "Yes, thank you, John." Mark said Yoko was already in the limo, and John then went and entered the car, and they drove away. He said he remembers feeling the sweat from his hand that was around the base of the .38 revolver. He had placed a piece of cardboard in front of the gun that was in his pocket to shield it from being noticed. He said, "Here is a man who was just kind enough to give me his autograph on his album and was going to be dead and didn't even know it." As John Lennon drove away, Mark was upset with himself because he knew he had just had the chance and didn't take it. So he decided to wait and hang around the building until later that evening. Back at the studio, John and Yoko were getting ready to go and get something to eat before they came home. For some reason, they decided not to, so they got into the limo and went home just like every other day. As they stepped away from the car, Yoko had gotten out first and walked past the killer. He just nodded to her, knowing that in seconds he was going to make her a widow. Then John stepped from the car carrying his tape recorder from the evening's music session. As he walked past, Mark said that he recognized him, and John started walking faster. "Mr. Lennon," he said. All hell broke loose. 5 hollow point bullets sprayed across the entrance, 4 of them in direct contact with John Lennon, and 1 of them going astray into the glass that was in front of him. John Lennon was bleeding to death. Well, we know the rest of the story, and we know what has happened since. We don't know what kind of a world it would have been had he survived, what kind of music we would have had, what kind of words of wisdom we would have heard. But it hurts just as much 28 years later. Going to go out with a piece by a band called Klaatu. We'll see you next week. OTW@2600.com is our email address. Good night.
Thank you. and you're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook.